Well, if you've been with us the last few weeks, you got to hear those words live as Dave and Heidi have both started this series that we're calling Courage. We're going through the book of Joshua because this is something that Joshua was called to. He was called to exhibit courage. And in particular, Joshua could show courage because God had promised to be with him and to be with Israel. So to start the morning off, I thought I'd share with you a time where I was courageous and changed the course of human history. I did this, of course, in a board game. The board game is called Axis and Allies. If you've ever played Risk, Axis and Allies is very similar to Risk. They take the whole map of the world, they divide it into these little territories, and you have to try to take over the territories and beat the other teams. What's different about Axis and Allies, though, is that, for one, it is way more complex than Risk is, with a lot of very confusing rules. And for two, it's set right after the French occupation, World War II. And so they try their best to be, you know, faithful to how history actually worked, but also had to make a playable game. So the way it happens is there's five players in this game, and they're divided into two teams. The ally team, it consists of the United States, Great Britain, and Russia. The Axis team consists of Germany and Japan. And the idea is you essentially try to beat whatever team you're up against. Now, in theory, the Axis powers can actually win in this game, right? They can rewrite history by actually winning the game. So some friends and I had acquired this game back when I was in high school, and we spent all of one Saturday just learning the rules and setting it up. Didn't have time to play the game. We came back the next Saturday, trying to play this game, and I played on the Allies' side, and the Allies handily won, just like it happened in history, right? United States comes in, last minute saves the day, kind of you know, the ideal situation, right? And so this keeps happening, though. We play a couple times. I even tried my hand at being an Axis power once. I tried being Japan. And no matter what we do, the Allies just keep winning. I cannot seem to rewrite history, right? Well, as it turns out, I would later learn that we had a particular version of the game that was notoriously imbalanced. It was actually really difficult for the Axis powers to win in our particular iteration of this game. But we were convinced that there was a way to do it. And it was while I was playing as Japan that I finally realized what I actually had to do, and I didn't like it. I had to play as Germany, for one. I had to be Germany. I couldn't be Japan, because I had to take over Germany. But I had to play a very different style than I've ever played. So if you ever played Risk, the way that I usually play and the way that I try to win is that I try to make sure all my borders are fortified and very slowly encroach on other people's territories, slowly taking other territories and fortifying those borders till you just slowly take over the whole board. That's not how you'd have to win Axis and Allies. The only way you can win this game, the only way the Axis powers could actually win this game, is for Germany to completely abandon its western flank to Great Britain. Just let it go. Let Britain have a heyday with it and spend all of its time and all of its forces blitzkrieging into Russia. That's all you could do. Japan had to do the same thing. If you took out Russia by turn three, it was possible for Japan to sneak in the back, help you reclaim the territories you lost for Britain, take over the continent before the United States ever showed up. That's the one way you could do it. And we did, and I rewrote history. It was fantastic. I tell you this to say that when God calls us to move, he calls us to move with everything we have and to leave nothing behind. So Joshua chapter 3, verse 1. So far, in the book of Joshua, God has spoken to Joshua, who's taken over the mantle since Moses died. And he's told Joshua that the first thing he's really going to do, the big thing he's going to do, is help Israel cross the Jordan. So this is what you see in verse 1. Early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out from Shittim and went to the Jordan where they camped before crossing over. They were going to do it. This is the setting. They're going to cross the Jordan. The thing is, though, and Joshua knew this painfully well, Israel had been here before. Israel was actually instructed to cross the Jordan 40 years ago, and they didn't do it. This is, I get to do maps, this is fun. This is a map of what God ultimately wanted for the people of Israel, right? So if you've ever seen this map before, this is the 12 tribes of Israel once they actually settle. And so this will happen. This is what God wanted for his people. And so that's roughly what we've got. So you've got the River Jordan right down in the middle, and you've got all these tribes of Israel that have taken over the promised land. But today, when our story starts, the map looks more like this. Everything they have is east of the Jordan. They've actually done a lot of conquering. They've already beaten a lot of people. They have a good amount of land. And you might ask yourself, why don't they just stay where they are? And you're getting ahead of me, but that's a good point. Today, they're all camped in Shittim, where that red dot is. And they're going to cross over the Jordan right next to that red dot. And they're going to attempt to fulfill this promise that God had given them. That essentially, they're going to walk over and they're going to take this land that God had said a long time ago he's going to give them. But today, that seems like a really daunting challenge, Because that river is hard to pass. And once you do pass the river, well, people aren't exactly going to hand you the land on the other side. And so they're afraid. And they've been here before. This is when it happened. Back in Numbers chapter 13, what you see is that Moses had tried to get the people to cross. And the way that he did this is he sent 12 spies across the waters so that they could actually see what was on the other side. And he was hoping that the 12 spies would help give a report that would encourage the people of Israel to actually cross the Jordan. But that didn't happen. When they got back, 10 of the 12 spies were horrified by what they saw. They saw big fortified cities with big scary people. And they were afraid. And even though God had promised them the land, they said, we can't do it. It's beyond our capacity. It's too scary. And they even started to say some things about the land, like, we don't really want that land anyway. It's not really any good. 10 of them. Now, 2 had a different story. They said, yeah, there are cities with big walls and big scary people, but remember God. God's the one who got us here. God's the one who's going to get us across the river. God's the one who's going to show up for us. One of those 2, his name was Caleb. He's the one who did most of the speaking. The other one was a young buck by the name of Joshua. The same Joshua that today is standing in front of the river trying to get people to cross. And he thinks back on this episode, he knows what happened. He knows that the 10 spies ultimately won out, and the people of Israel, they got afraid. They did not want to cross. They were afraid for their lives and for their future, and so they refused to cross the river. And as a result, they end up in kind of dire straits. In chapter 14 of Numbers, this is what they end up hearing from God through Moses. In this wilderness, your bodies will fall. Every one of you, 20 years old or more, who was counted in the census and who has grumbled against me. Not one of you will enter the land I swore with uplifted hand to make your home, except Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, son of Nun, the 2 spies who said, yeah, we can do it. And then in verse 33, it says, your children will be shepherds here for 40 years, suffering for your unfaithfulness until the last of your bodies lies in the wilderness. And so if you've heard of Israel wandering the desert for 40 years, well, this is why. God asked them to get out. God said, cross. And they said no. And this was Moses. This was Moses. He's like the greatest leader that had ever been at that point. And still, when the Israelites look back on all the great leaders, Moses is one of the first names that comes up, right? This is Moses, and he can't get them to cross the Jordan. They just won't do it. And now, for 40 years, they're going to sit on the other side, aware that their promise is right over there, but they just can't get it. God had called them to an act of courage, and they just refused. Now, 40 years goes by, and in this time, basically all the players here, just like it said, are pretty much all gone now. It's a whole new generation. People who weren't part of the decision-making body that decided not to cross the Jordan, so it's new people with a new chance, a new opportunity. But they do have a little bit of lapse in memory. As much as I'm sure they were told the story, sometimes they forgot. And interestingly enough, 40 years go by, and right as they're preparing to talk about actually crossing the Jordan again, Moses is still here, there's a couple of the tribes that kind of get cold feet again. So this is what happens, actually. So in chapter 32, the Reubenites and the Gadites, these are 2 of the 12 tribes of Israel, and by the end of this, the half-tribe of Manasseh will also be doing this as well. The Reubenites and the Gadites, who had very large herds and flocks, saw that the lands of Jazer and Gilead were suitable for livestock. So I'm going to throw that map back up, and I'm going to show you what the lands of Gilead and Jazer were. Essentially, Manasseh, Gad, and Reuben would take over this whole section east of the Jordan. They didn't have to cross to get their land. They wanted this land because it was already good. I mean, a lot of it's right along the river. It's very fertile. There's a lot of space, and they have large herds and flocks. For them, it seemed like this land was as good as any. Why don't we just stay here? It's a very pragmatic decision, and one that would kind of help them alleviate their fear of crossing the river. So this is what they actually say in the next verse. They say, if we have found favor in your eyes, they said, let this land be given to your servants as our possession. Do not make us cross the Jordan. We're good here. Let's just stay here. This land's good. God's been good to us so far. We're going to stay. And Moses thinks back 40 years. He says, have you learned nothing? This is what he says in verse 6. Moses said to the Gadites and the Reubenites, should your fellow Israelites go to war while you sit here? Why do you discourage the Israelites from crossing over into the land the Lord has given them? And he spends the next several verses just recounting the whole story about how they ended up in the wilderness for 40 years. Like, do you remember why you're here? It's because you refuse to cross the Jordan. Are we really going to play this game again? I mean, this is what you see in verse 14. And here you are, a brood of sinners, standing in the place of your fathers and making the Lord even more angry with Israel. If you turn away from following him, he will again leave all of his people in the wilderness, and you will be the cause of their destruction. Do you want to do this another 40 years? It's good land. It is. But it isn't about the land. It's about doing life with God. It's about following God where he's asking you to go. It's about having the courage to follow the leading of God. And right now, God is saying, cross the Jordan. Are you really going to stand by and miss out on the promise of God? Is the land that important to you that you would doom all of Israel just so you can stay where you are? Well, I don't know what happened exactly next. I don't know how long it took the Reubenites and the Gadites and ultimately the half-tribe of Manasseh to make this decision, but here's what they say in verse 16. Then they came up to him, Moses, and said, "We would like to build pens here for our livestock and cities for our women and children, but we will arm ourselves for the battle and go ahead of the Israelites until we have brought them to their place. Meanwhile, our women and children will live in the fortified cities for protection from the inhabitants of the land." In other words, we really do want to stay here, but we will still cross. If that's what God is calling us to do, then we'll cross. Now, Moses agreed to this plan, but I have to imagine in the back of Moses' mind, he was a little bit afraid of it, because the reality was, would the Gadites and the Reubenites and the half-tribe of Manasseh, would they actually cross? I mean, at this point in time, they're going to have everything they need. There's going to be nothing to actually compel them to go across. It's actually going to put them at great risk, and they're going to get nothing out of it. But nonetheless, this is what they agreed to. "We will not return to our homes until the end, each of the Israelites has received their inheritance." That's what they're going for. We're going to stand with our brothers and sisters, but would they? So Joshua is inheriting these conversations. He inherited a people who 40 years ago wouldn't cross the Jordan. And now he's got some people here in front of him who these Reubenites and these Gadites are saying they're going to cross, but they've got no reason to. And so the day has come to actually cross the Jordan, and the big question on Joshua's mind is this even going to happen? This is a scary thing. This is uncertain. We're not even sure if we can do it. I mean, the people, they had to have seen the obstacles in front of them and said, we're not sure there's even a path here. So this is what happens in Joshua chapter 3, verse 2. They begin to set out on this journey. After 3 days, the officers went throughout the camp, that red dot that we saw earlier. They went throughout the camp, giving orders to the people. "When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God and the Levitical priest carrying it, you are to move out from your position and follow it." And verse 4 says this, "Then you will know which way to go since you have never been this way before," which I think is kind of a slight. Like, remember how you're supposed to be in this land? You don't know where you're going, so just follow us. You're supposed to be there. And so here they're called now. They're called to cross this river. They're called to go to the other side. And I just don't know how they're going to do it. There are a lot of obstacles in their path, a lot of them. Once they cross the river, there's these armies and people who will want to kill them. There's these big fortified cities that they don't know how to take. But all of that's actually irrelevant, because all of that is still behind one major obstacle, which is crossing that darn river. Verse 14 helps us understand that this is actually not an easy feat. "So when the people broke camp to cross the Jordan, the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them." Now, the Jordan is at flood stage all during harvest. Not only is there a river, but the thing is flooded. So put this map back up. Israel's got the red dot. Jericho, the first city they're going to have to deal with, has the black star. All of them see this river. Jericho's already afraid. We learned that in chapter 2. Jericho's afraid. They don't like the fact that God has been with Israel so far. But here's the reality. As long as Israel's on that side of the river, they're not too worried. Now, if Israel wanted to try to march south of the Dead Sea and wrap back around, that would be a little scary. But while they're on that side of the flooded river, Israel, for all of its might, just wasn't a major concern. Because that river is an obstacle. Now, I think, at least this is true in my life, for me, one of the biggest reasons that I fail to follow up on an act of courage God is calling me to is because I don't understand how it's supposed to work. I'm the kind of person who likes to see the path to victory before I start. That's why the whole Blitzkrieg thing with Germany was really hard for me, right? It was not the path I like to take. I like to take it slow, steady with each step, carefully calculated. Be careful sharing your lifelong dreams with me because I will probably find 5 reasons why you can't do it. And here they are, facing this river, these challenges. They know what they're called to do, but they just don't see how it's supposed to work out. I think for many of us, right there, courage dies. When we don't see the how, we miss out on God's what. We miss out on what God has actually called us to do. And so much of the journey with God ultimately is about seeing Him work through the difficulty. But that's the part we wish we had figured out ahead of time. It doesn't always work that way. Israel was so concerned about the how that 40 years ago they said no and spent 40 years wandering the desert. How are we going to conquer all those people? How are we even going to get across this darn river? Well, look at the next verse. Yet as soon as the priests who carried the ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap a great distance away at a town called Adam in the vicinity of Zarethan. While the water flowing down the Sea of the Arabah, this is the Dead Sea, was completely cut off. The words are a little bit funky there. Completely cut off. There we go. The water stopped. It parted. And dry land appeared in the river. If you've ever read the history of Israel, when they leave Egypt, they encounter this body of water, and they think, it's over. Egypt, the army is right behind us. They're going to get us. We followed God. We courageously took the step of leaving Egypt, and now this body of water sits in front of us. This army sits behind us. We're doomed, and God parts the water. And now, 40 years later, they're watching this river part, and you have to imagine they're going, we spent 40 years in the desert because we forgot that God has that magic trick. God has been faithful in their past. He got them out of binds before. He was the one leading them. They even forgot how He did it. And now God is making a way again. And they can actually take the steps in courage. This is why courage only makes sense when we understand the promise that God gave Joshua at the beginning of the book. I will never leave you. I will never, ever, ever leave you. I will be with you. Because when God is with us, when we take the steps of courage He's asked us to take, then all of these obstacles become irrelevant. They don't disappear, but God gets to work past them. And that's the great part of being on a journey with God, is being in this process of seeing Him remove the obstacles or change the obstacles or overcome the obstacles that prevent us from getting where we think we need to go. Because God is with us. And so for us, friends, I believe this, that God is probably calling each of us in this room to take some act that requires courage. Sitting here, I don't know what that is for you. Maybe if we had a conversation, we could talk about it, we could figure it out together. But I really do believe that God is calling us consistently to take steps of courage. I believe this because God actually wants change. I know for us, change is difficult, but here's why we should actually want change, right? The reason we should want change is because the kingdom of God is not fully realized yet. Everything we have right now is proto-kingdom of God. And so really, we want to constantly see change as we move closer and closer to the fully realized kingdom of God. Change is a good thing. It just scares us because we don't know how it's all going to go. And that was true for the Israelites, right? They had that promised land in front of them, but it was scary for them. God was asking them to change, and that was hard. But when God is with us and helps us to take those steps of courage, we get to live into His promises in our life, and our life with God becomes enriched. This story is not about Israel taking land. This story is about Israel having a meaningful, impactful relationship with God, walking in step with where He is leading them. And that's what they're called to. And so I don't know what step of courage you might be called to today, but I do know this. I know a couple steps of courage that people in our church have taken just in the last few months. I know of someone who's given up some career opportunities in order to pursue full-time ministry. I know of a team of high schoolers and college students who found some way to put their studies on hold just a little bit so that they could fulfill the calling that God placed on their lives to go serve overseas. I've seen people take the first steps to re-examining their budget so they could begin to give their resources to God, and people taking the first steps of re-examining their schedules so they can give their time to the kingdom of God. I've seen people who are willing to jump into a rooted group or something like that, where they actually are exposed to other Christians, they're vulnerable with other Christians, but they get to do life with them and experience what the Spirit has to offer. I've seen some of them take the step of baptism, committing their life to what God is going to be doing now and in the future. I've seen people who have opened up their homes to displaced children who, because of situations outside their control, cannot find any other home to go to. I have seen people who've taken up the challenge to engage their neighbors seriously. They have met people where they live, work, and play, and found ways to be good, loving neighbors to them. I've seen people who've taken up the challenge to instill spiritual disciplines in their life and have a brand new revitalized relationship with God because they tried something they had never tried before. I've seen people who are willing to stand up in front of a wedding crowd and talk about God at a wedding because that's what they were called to in the moment. I've seen people stand strong and firm with God because He asked them to. That takes courage. So friends, let's cross that river. Let's go where God has asked us to go. And because God is with us, we can have the courage to take those steps. And right here is where I would typically end the sermon, but I can't. There's one more story to tell. Joshua chapter 4. People begin to cross. Actually, a lot of things happen in the river, which is a little bit creepy when you think about it. There's all these people doing these things in the river, like any moment that water could theoretically wash you away. But they do their stuff. And then toward the end of it, right at the end, Joshua chapter 4, you see these words. Now the priests who carried the ark remained standing in the middle of the Jordan until everything the Lord commanded Joshua was done by the people, just as Moses had directed Joshua. The people hurried over, and as soon as all of them had crossed, the ark of the Lord and the priests came to the other side while the people watched. Well, almost everyone anyway. The text will help us understand something in just a minute. Everyone had crossed the river except the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. Everyone had crossed over. The armies of Israel, the men, the women, the children of all the other tribes, but not the Reubenites, the Gadites, or the half-tribe of Manasseh. As you can imagine, if this is the river, and over here, this is the side that they're coming from, and this is the side they're going to now, the priests who are carrying the ark, they've moved all the way to the other side of the river. They're not standing in the middle. And the idea, and we'll see this in a minute, but the idea is if they keep going, if the ark has moved out of the river, that's probably going to be the end of it. And all of Israel is sitting here, and the people watched. And the thing they were watching for, the thing they wanted to see if it would happen, would the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh actually cross? Would their soldiers go? Would they leave behind their women, children, flocks, recently established land, gain nothing, and support their brothers and sisters? Really, there was no reason. And if history was any indicator, people get pretty freaked out about crossing this river. Would they actually cross? And then this happens. The men of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh crossed over, ready for battle in front of the Israelites, as Moses had directed them. About 40,000 armed for battle crossed over before the Lord to the plains of Jericho for war. They went. Those who could fight left behind what they had to help others receive the promise of God. And verse 14 says this, that day the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all of Israel, and they stood in awe of him all the days of his life, just as they had stood in awe of Moses. And verse 18, everything comes to an end. And the priests came out of the river carrying the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. No sooner had they set their feet on dry ground, the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and ran at flood stage as before. There's no going back. You cannot return. You've blitzkrieged out of Germany, you're taking Russia. You've thrown everything you have at this to follow God courageously, even those who had nothing to gain, because they knew that their calling was not just to live out the acts of courage in their own lives, but to support the acts of courage in others. And friends, this is the beauty of the church. When you or I are called by God to exhibit an act of courage, something that seems beyond us, something that seems too difficult for us to do, we are not alone. We are not alone because God is with us and God's people are with us. And so it may be that God has some act of courage for you to take today. And please, please pray. Seek the Spirit. Ask God, what steps would you have me to take? But it might also be that the person sitting next to you, someone else in your life, someone else you know, is on the verge of taking a step of courage that seems too big for them, that seems beyond what they're capable of. And God has positioned you to take up your armor, cross the Jordan, and battle with them. Do not miss out on that opportunity. Because when God calls us to courage, when he promises to never leave us, what we get to be a part of is more than land, more than goods, more than even just an easy life. It's a life with God, where God takes us every step of the way, showing us how he is going to overcome everything in our path. Even when it's different than the way we would like to see it, God will move with us. And we get to have that life with God now and forever. So together, take that step of courage, cross the Jordan, and for those around you who need that extra help, drag them with you. Let's all go together. God, this story is so powerful. You have done so many incredible things through so many of your people throughout history. And now, God, I pray that we would take that same spirit of courage, that we would take that promise that you will never leave us. And through that, God, we would have the willingness, the ability, the courage to cross before us, even when we don't understand how it's all going to work out. Because, God, you are with us. So we surrender ourselves to you. God, show us where to move and help us to follow in total, complete courage. In your name we pray.